Hey, this is Macy Gray, and you are listening to OC Caravan with Scott Hayes and Jim Bass. Come on.
All right. You're listening to KX 93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM. I'm repeating myself. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Yeah? I'm Scott.
April's he up? He sounds a little distant.
Yeah. Remember to stay on the mic, April, too, when you're chatting with
us. We're all good. Sorry, Scott.
No, that's
I'm good. Doing great.
Yeah. So I'm Scott Hayes. This is OC Caravan. I'm in the studio with a lot of people this morning. It sounds really shallow.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I don't know.
If somebody's listening, give us a text. Jim or Jill or myself.
Oh, I can hear it.
But there's a huge echo going on.
I get that.
All right. Well, by the way,
oh, there we go.
Caravan.
Much better.
Are we listening? Hello, McFly. Ready? Hike.
April got it fixed. She's
nice.
A genius.
Thank you for the credit.
Reintro. We're going to reintro this. You're listening to KX 93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this, of course, is OC Caravan. And in the studio this morning with me is my co-host, Jim Bastian, whose voice you've been listening to.
Yes. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jim.
Try take two.
Take two. And as a reminder, OC Caravan is on Cox Channel 3, 8 p.m. Saturdays, 12 noon Sundays, 240,000 Cox subscribers. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to our show that we did with voice impersonator Jeff Trakta, he's on tonight, 8 p.m. and tomorrow, 12 noon, Channel 3.
Very funny show. Very funny.
Very funny. Very entertaining. Yeah.
My favorite part was when he did All in the Family.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And somebody was listening and said that he thought he was one of the best voice impersonators he had ever heard.
I thought he was outstanding.
Yes. Amazing.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
And, of course, Healthy Lifestyle reporter Jill Harvey's in the room with us.
Morning. I heard you guys missed me a lot last week.
We did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Big time.
Yeah. I had like a million people texting me saying, wow, we missed you, too. A million, I think.
A million.
It was.
How
yeah.
can we not miss you?
Well, you missed our nose harp concert. So
is that what that was?
That was
I thought it was humming. I'm like, what was all that humming going on?
It's an art that you probably weren't aware of, the nose harp.
I'm aware of it now.
Yes.
My brother-in-law, Mark, and then we were thinking of starting a band, right, with the armpit
right.
and the
armpit
nose
bass.
Harp and,
yep.
and some other things. I forget what was said.
I'll be the first to buy a ticket.
She just set herself up perfectly.
Yeah.
I won't
go for it.
Go for it. No, go for it.
Well, we were worried that Mark was playing the skin flute.
Oh.
So, here we go.
I don't get it.
Of course you I've heard that about you.
You can also like us on Facebook, so check it out, facebook.com/ OC Caravan. So, Jim, what's going on? You got some funny news before we get to Jill's?
Well, no, I'm going through the paper this morning just seeing if there's anything interesting in the news. And right there on the front page of the Register's local section is 50 Shades of Grey whales. Apparently, there were some whales mating in the Dana Point Harbor area for 28 hours.
Oh, my.
Really?
So, Jill, as someone
who
awesome.
Explores healthy lifestyle and
they're
other
really
things.
Fit.
I mean, that's like tantra to the nth degree, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Totally. And they're very fit whales.
And do they typically mate for 24 hours?
Yeah, they said like 6 to 8 hours would be the max.
Wow.
But this one particular whale was saddled up for 28 hours.
Saddled up, huh?
And apparently he has a spinal condition.
Uh-oh.
How does anybody know this?
Well, they were looking at him, and they call him Scully because he's got scoliosis, apparently.
Oh, my goodness.
So maybe that has something to do with it. I have no idea, but he and she went at it. Although they weren't exactly sure, but they went at it for 28 hours.
Wow.
So it's pretty incredible.
Awesome.
You know, there's a documentary out there, I think CNN put it together, called Blackfish. And if you haven't seen it, it's very interesting about SeaWorld and sort of the capturing of these whales and the and encasing of these whales, you know. Most of their time is not spent in a big pool with in front of an audience. Most of their time is spent sort of behind the scenes in these little confined areas. Nonetheless, I think they demonstrated actually on camera sort of the mating process of whales.
Yeah.
And how that actually works. So it was pretty interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And these were humpback whales.
No coincidence.
Of course.
I'm going to remain silent on this one. Yeah.
Other interesting news,
Please.
Not as funny,
yeah.
but apparently South Orange County on its own is the 116th largest economy in the world. Would rank right above Trinidad and Tobago. And so, you know, we have
That's
that
a
going on.
Line, isn't it?
We have that going on.
It's
right?
incredible news.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
South County?
But we're getting older.
Ah.
The population has aged 23.5% over the last 5 years.
Hmm.
families came in, mm-hmm. families age, mm-hmm. you know, this area grew up in the
But what does that have to do with
70s.
The economy then? How's that affecting the
Well, the concern
economy?
Is that people get out of the job market. They're not buying as many things. There's the consumer population isn't as strong, but it's still a strong and robust economy. It's just the concern is that as the population ages, it could flatten out a little bit. Hmm. So, anyway.
Very nice. Very
well,
nice.
I've heard, too, that there's that influenza. People think Orange County is so wealthy, but, you know, over the years, there's been a...
Affluenza. Yes.
And but there's been an increase of people who are struggling now and who are homeless in Orange County as well.
Oh, right. Sure.
So that affluenza...
Yeah, so but South Orange County only has a 3.1% unemployment rate, which is lower than the county average and significantly lower than the national average. So on that basis, it's a very strong area, South County.
Where do they start South County? Laguna Beach, you think?
I would say it's Lake Forest through San Clemente.
And then all the way down?
On the coastal side, Laguna Beach through San Clemente.
Mission Viejo, those communities as well?
Yep, Mission Viejo, Rancho Santa Margarita.
Yeah. Cota de Casa?
Cota de Casa.
Hmm.
Yep. Really, you think Cota would be South County? I guess it's South County part. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. What there else? Any other news going on there? Or?
No, I've just, again, another weekend where me as Mr. Mom. So
oh, that's right.
Last weekend, wife went up to Santa Barbara with her sisters and mother. And this weekend, her and my oldest are currently in North Carolina visiting Wake Forest yesterday and University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill today. They had to go through Dallas. Mm. You saw all that snow this week.
Mm-hmm.
Airlines said everything looked good. They get on the flight, John Wayne, get to Dallas. Though the flight from Dallas to Greensboro was canceled.
Oh,
so they spent the night in Dallas. Airline was nice enough to give them a toothbrush.
That's very nice.
No bags, because the bags were apparently fine to go to North Carolina, but they weren't.
Were they gave them a hotel room?
Nope.
Not even a hotel room?
Nope. So they were on their own.
And what's the story she tells you? Why are they going away so many weekends in a row? What are you hearing? Come on.
No. This is purely a college visit. We're swapping the role, so I'll be taking my daughter to Boston and Philly in a couple weeks.
Very
That'll be
nice.
Fun trip.
Yeah. So
you have to let us know what weekends those are, right?
I know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, so it may not matter actually in the end, but
we'll see
how that works out. But you want to talk a little bit about your laser?
So last night we had my daughter, the 14-year-old eighth grader, is in National Charity League, and then they once a year do a father daughter event. And last night it was laser tag at the Laser Quest at Kaleidoscope. So bunch of dads and bunch of daughters did laser tag last night. And it's kind of funny. You see people get pretty competitive once they're in that dark environment with the gun and the vest and everything.
It's exciting.
Not me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
No, not at all.
Not me.
Competitive.
No, they say no running allowed.
No running?
Yeah, someone
Why
got busted
it?
For running. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Have you ever been paintballing?
I have not.
Oh, my gosh.
Have you done that?
I have, yeah.
I heard that can be painful.
The very first time I did it was in Georgia with my brother-in-law, right? And his two sons, and they had property out there, and we were going to go out in the woods. But before we went the next day, I wanted to be hit with a paintball because I didn't want to go all day anticipating that paintball and anticipating what that might feel like. So we went in the backyard, and I had his son Adamo shoot me in the back, and he shot me around the butt, lower back area,
nice.
Just so I could get that sting out of the way, you know.
And then you were good?
And then I was good because then I knew what to expect after that, right?
Nice.
So, yeah, as long as you don't get in the face, you're pretty much okay.
Reminds me of my brother-in-law. We have some friends that are police officers in Chicago. And so my brother-in-law, who's kind of a crazy guy, we're all visiting at a party. It's like 2 in the morning. He's like, I've never been tased. You guys got to tase me. So these cops get out there. They have their taser guns.
This is good.
And he's standing there. He's like, go for it. And they're like, really? Come on. And he's like, yeah, I want to feel it.
Yeah. And?
Oh, it was crazy. He just goes down. And he's like.
What was his response?
He was like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
But, enjoyed it. This is good.
Yeah, nothing good happens after 2 a.m., right?
I was looking
Don't tase me, bro.
I have a way better paintball story.
Go ahead.
Go.
So
my
brother wanted to give me an idea about what it felt like to get paintballed, right? So he says, there's no paintball in here. It's just like the air of the gun. So you get an idea, but it won't hurt too bad. So he comes and puts the gun like right to my back, between my shoulder blades.
Mm.
There's no space between the gun and my back. There's a paintball in there. I had a welt for like a month.
What? And he did that intentionally? Like,
I don't know if he did or not.
A similar thing happened to me with a BB gun.
I have to ask him.
Really?
Is that when I was a kid, this neighbor who was really crazy. I mean, you ever see the movie Harold and Maude?
Sure, yeah.
When Harold is out there and he's doing all this crazy stuff, like there's a scene in the backyard where he lights himself on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how crazy this guy is. One day we're out there and we lived on a hill and there's a little bit of water running in the gutter. He looks outside, he does one of these, goes in the garage, pulls out a gasoline can. Starts taking it and pouring it I'm like, what the heck is he doing? So he goes up and he lights the dang thing on fire. It's like apocalypse now on our street. And they, he's just like, I'm like, what do you, the rest of us go when we try to put out, you know, a gasoline fire in water and it's going down towards the gutter. The kid's crazy. So anyway, flash forward, I'm over, we're there and he's like, hey, and he's got his BB gun. And I'm like, okay, this isn't good. And he's like, there's nothing in here. And he shakes it and it's just rattle, rattle, rattle. He comes up to me point blank and pops me in the chest.
Ouch.
That hurt.
I'll bet. Whoa. Did you cry?
I didn't cry. No. It just hit me, and it was just a big welt, puncture, bruise.
Man. Ouch. I think the worst I've ever been hit with, and you would know this, Jim, from Chicago, an ice ball.
Yeah. That's different than a snowball.
Oh, mama. Yeah, yeah. I was...
That hurts. How big is it?
No, no, it's like, it's just a snowball, it, like you're making a snowball, but it's you run ice. It underwater intentionally, and you make an ice ball, and we're having... Ooh.
Yeah.
Right in the cheek.
Happens.
Yeah, one? I'm good
which
though.
Cheek?
I'm good now.
Which cheek?
You can't tell. I'm not going to tell you.
Did you cry?
I was like a girly tomboy kind of chick growing up. Yeah,
I'll show you.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know where that guy is now. Shh.
All right. Sharing war stories here this morning. I love it.
I think Jill needs to tell me what I'm doing wrong.
In terms of what?
Well, every time she comes on here with her healthy lifestyle tip, I learn what I'm doing wrong.
Well, you're going to learn some more today. So, Miss Jill Harvey's in the room, our healthy lifestyle reporter. And Jill, what are we talking about this morning?
Well, I think it's really fitting given our amazing guest coming on today. But it is, how do you define fitness?
Okay.
Right? So in the dictionary, fitness, if you look at the Darwinian definition.
Darwinian, look at the words
Darwinian,
coming out of her.
Darwinian, not to start any controversy with that word. But it's the ability of a species or an organism to adapt to its environment, reproduce, and survive into the next generation. But that's not what we're talking about, except those whales. The other fitness, when you look it up, the true definition of fitness is the state or condition of being physically sound and healthy, especially as the result of exercising and good nutrition. So that's the direction we're heading. What are you looking at me like that for, Jim?
And again.
She's pointed out two things you don't do well, exercise and good eating.
I do, but nowhere near her level. No. I don't reproduce either. I've had a vasectomy twice.
There you go.
Why twice?
First one didn't stick.
Oh, is that true?
True story.
Oh, no.
Have you ever heard this story?
No.
This is an awesome story.
Well, save it. No, no. Let's let her finish.
Oh,
I don't want to come back to that.
That is hysterical. I don't know if I can finish now. I'm done.
I want to come back to that.
So, anyway, when we look at fitness, there are really five components. It's muscular strength, muscular endurance, flexibility, cardiorespiratory health, and body composition.
Yeah.
They've added a new one in, which is waist circumference, because So for men, that waist circumference, if you are 37 to 40, you are in the danger zone of heart health. I did bring a tape measure.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I actually carry one in my purse just for different things. But
no one's worried about you and me. We're the only ones concerned
for different
about that.
Things.
And then women, if you're 31.5 inches to 35 inches, that starts putting you in the danger zone.
Yeah.
So what happens is you just
I'm
start collecting.
A dangerous woman.
Danger zone. Dangerous woman. Oh, you're dangerous.
Sorry.
It's okay, Jim. You don't need to be sorry.
That's all right.
Bruce is doing it. Bruce Jenner. Brenda Jenner. What? It's okay.
Is it Brenda? I thought it was Belinda.
No, I just made that up.
That was good.
No, I think it's Belinda.
It is. It probably is.
Yeah, I think it was like that.
It should have been Brenda.
Okay,
like
go
that.
Ahead.
All right.
We're off topic.
So then we also look at, you know, when you're looking at fitness, it helps us as we move on in life, right? So it's about agility. It's about a balance. It's about speed. It's about your ability to have good reflexes.
Yeah.
So when I look at you, Scott, what would you define being fit for you?
Not where I'm at currently. Yeah.
Yeah, if in your greatest picture.
Where would I be in terms of my weight?
What do you
weight?
Think fitness would mean for you?
You know, I think it would just mean maintaining a healthy lifestyle for me. It would be better eating habits, probably more cardio and some weight training would help. And then if I'm on that right path, I'm not necessarily worried about weight and all that other stuff.
Right.
That's my thinking. So.
Exactly right. Jim? For you. Oh, God, do I ask?
No, I'm probably a B minus right now.
So, but
we're grading ourselves?
Just trying to come up, you know, where
okay,
am I?
Okay, B minus?
B minus.
But what would you say is fit for you? How do you look at fitness? What does it mean to you?
Six-pack
abs?
No, well, I think that's actually impossible after you're 40. I just don't think.
It's not.
No.
Okay, so in the real world.
That made him feel good.
Okay, I mean, so I can
thanks, Herb.
I can give up drinking. I can
that ain't going to happen.
I can give up In-N-Out.
That ain't going to happen.
I can give up, no, what it is I would need to exercise probably 3 more days a week. Right now I'm at 3. I'd have to go 6. I'd have to, instead of eating well during the week, I'd have to eat well on the weekend because I usually flip off the wagon on the weekend.
Right.
Sure.
And I would need to definitely get more flexibility.
Yeah. But I think
because I don't stretch.
But like the greater picture of this, like April, you're really fit as well. But why do we want to do this? You know, so we have to really look that, you know, in your 20s, sometimes
it's straight vanity.
But now after that 40, after 30, even, you know, when you're young in your 20s, although April, you're pushing 30. It's, you know, it's about really where we want to be. We want to be bodily able.
Right.
We don't want to need assistance. So we look at different ways. Like when we had Lauren Powers in here, bodybuilder, that is fitness to her. A wrestler, that's fitness to them. Boxer, that's fitness. Yoga, some people are just doing yoga. And then you have your runners, your cyclists, your swimmers, you have your triathletes. And it's not that all this isn't fit, but that you don't want to get stuck in just doing one thing. The body will adapt again. But you want to cross train. It's really important to cross train. So I was a competitive swimmer growing up. And last summer, I jumped in the pool. I'm like, oh, let me do a few laps. By the third lap, I was gasping.
Yeah.
Even though I can cycle, I can run, I was like, whoa. So, you know, and also mental fitness. You know, we have to decide that everything in our life starts with a thought, right? So every day you wake up, you have conversations with yourself. And you want to contribute to your well-being. So if you know, like in my classes, when I'm teaching, if a woman's looking in the mirror and she's thinking, oh, crap, I look like crap. Rudd. So anyway, when you have bad self conversations, it really leads to a destructive path.
Right.
When you can change that and really get into good conversation that, hey, I may be 20 pounds overweight, 30, but love where you are in the journey. So we're going to look at like also the ability to try new things, right? So if you cycle all the time, go for a run, go for a swim. This past week, I did aerial yoga. Oh my God, it was so amazing.
What is it?
Aerial yoga. They have these silk cloths hanging from the ceiling.
I've seen that on America's Got Talent.
Oh my!
What is it? Explain it.
So it's these. They can hold 2,000 pounds, and they are silk fabric hanging, and you are up in the air doing all these different
like
maneuvers,
like a Cirque du Soleil performer,
almost like a Cirque du Soleil, but you're doing yoga postures.
Oh wow, that
and,
sounds fun.
You know, for me,
and you're holding your own body weight,
using arms, core. But for me, it was really about. That it was something new and challenging.
Yep.
I know I'm fit. I know I'm strong. I know I'm mentally capable most times. But it's that ability to have that strength. I had to use my body in a different way. And it was exciting. And I left there like just, you know, really exhilarated. So, yeah. So, you know, I just challenge people to get out there, do something different, whether it's hiking. Don't get stuck in a pattern.
Well, I was just going to say it's a nice segue into our guest coming after the break here. And I want to kind of give everybody a sense of who we got coming in. We've got Bonner Paddock, who recently, a couple of years ago, climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and just completed his first Ironman competition. And so this is a perfect conversation to lead into his segment coming after the break. Joe.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's amazing.
So what else? Is that it? We're done?
I think I just want you all to get out there and move and do something. And look, it doesn't mean you can't drink. It doesn't mean you can't eat things you shouldn't eat.
Right.
It means take good care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, take care of yourself mentally, emotionally, physically.
I love that.
Well, the one thing she says that I'm probably the worst at is I'm in a pattern. My workouts, the ones I do.
Yeah.
I do the same thing every time. Because, well, my thing is it's about time. So I have about a 55-minute window in the morning to get it done.
Yeah.
So I tend to do the same thing every day. And it keeps me, you know, reasonably active and fit. But to your point, if I tried to go run a 10K right now, I'd struggle with it.
Yeah.
Right, which you wouldn't want to do. You'd want to build up to that
anyway.
But
or if you tried to play one-on-one with me on the courts, I would dominate at this point.
And
probably.
You'd break your wrist.
Possibly. Possibly. We may be playing a little one-on-one here. I think you just threw a challenge.
I want to see this. Let's get the cameras there.
I did throw
not
a little
one-on-one like the Gray Whales and Dana Point.
Oh, God.
No basketball.
Oh, Lordy. Oh.
There's a thought. There's a thought. Hey, I don't want to forget about your vasectomy. Talk to me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's that?
All right. So this is surreal. So when you go get a vasectomy, you're going to urologist. And OC Urology in Mission Viejo does this thing where they bring all the guys in on a Saturday. So you go to the waiting room. They've got chairs set up, room full of guys, completely uncomfortable and awkward. Doctor pops out. He's like, hey, you know, we're about to get to know each other really well, so I think it's my job to come and meet each one of you. So he literally goes around the room. I'm doctor. You know, and he's shaking hands with all of us, and we're like, okay, this is really weird. He's got the flipboard. He's drawn all the anatomy, describing what he's going to do. Completely uncomfortable. About 20 minutes into the thing, the doors fling open, and this guy comes walking in, and he's got a cowboy hat, chaps, spurs. I mean, he's clanging and changling, and he comes in. He's like, is this where the vasectomy meeting is? And like, yeah, you're a little late, but come on down here. So the doctor gets to the point where he's talking about the recovery, and he says, you know, you're going to be laid up for a full weekend, and you're probably not going to be able to do much physical activity for a couple weeks or 3 weeks. Cowboy raises his hand.
This is going to be clean, right?
Oh, yeah. Cowboy raises his hand. He goes, am I going to be okay to ride? And the doctor, swear to God, goes, what kind of riding? Cycling? And everyone's like, he's got chaps on. He's like,
yeah.
No, horseback riding.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you're not going to be able to do that for at least a month. He's all, this ain't for me. And he gets up and walks out.
Oh, my God.
And it looked like it was a plant. I mean, that was just like, there's no way that this guy just comes out of there. Yeah. Anyway, so I go through. Bottom line is I go the first time, and they want to train this other nurse.
Oh,
and so they put me in the stirrups, and is it okay if she observes? And so she's observing the lady go through the whole thing. Doctor comes in. He does his thing. It's very painful. Needles, solder, it's all bad. So anyway,
I didn't want to think about it.
Woo.
I get up, and I'm, you know, getting ready to get my clothes back on to leave. And I look down, and it's blood dripping, drip, drip. And I'm like, oh, this isn't good.
Oh, boy.
I'm wandering out, and I'm going through the, like, hello, hello. And I'm in the back, you know, operating room in the facility. Hello. I go a little bit further. Hello. And I'm in my gown. And then I'm kind of down the hall. I'm like, hello, anybody here? And all of a sudden behind me here, can I help you? The finance department of the doctor's office. And there's me hanging full.
Excellent.
With her
dripping blood.
So he comes in, and he apparently forgot to stitch me up.
Oh, my God.
So he stitches me up. I go in, and you're supposed to come back and get tested like 6 weeks later. So they give you a paper bag. They give you a sample. And I'm like, okay.
Give you a sample of what?
You got to give a sample.
Oh, you have to give a sample. All right.
So I offer my sample. I go into the office, packed this time with older people.
Yeah.
I bring my like lunch bag, and I go to the door or to the counter, and I say, oh, I'm here to drop off my sample. I had a vasectomy. She's like, did you call ahead? And I'm like, no, I didn't know you were supposed to. Well, the directions say you have to call ahead. Well, how long ago did you leave the sample? I'm like, 15 minutes. She's like, Marge, we got to walk in. So they're panicked, and they're freaking out. And they're going crazy with it.
Yeah.
So a day later, I get a phone call. And Mr. Bastian, this is Dr. So-and-so's office. We have your results. Please don't do anything. Call us immediately.
Oh, my.
And I call him up. She's like, the doctor needs to see you immediately. I'm like, okay, what's going on? So I go in, and the doctor, he's like, well, one of two things happen. You either have, and he's an Indian guy, so pardon me. He goes, you either have unusual anatomy, or you had recanalization, which is when the vas deferens reconnects.
Yeah.
I'm like, unusual anatomy? What does that mean? He goes, sometimes people have a hidden testicle.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, okay.
Wow.
So anyway,
this gets better and
he examines
better.
I don't have unusual anatomy. I recanalized. He's like, okay, we're going to have to do it again.
Yeah.
And he's like, this has never happened to me before.
Uh-huh.
So the next time he's like ticked. He's like going to make this happen. And so it was way more aggressive, way worse. He stitched me up. This time it was really funny. Instead of having a nurse training, they had 10 students, physician's assistants and nurse practitioners that he wanted to observe.
Uh-huh.
So this time I had a party of 12 when I was having my vest.
Are you awake during this process?
Totally.
Yeah, okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So in any event, had it twice. Second one stuck.
Yeah.
Woo.
And you had 12 people watching you go through this process.
14, but yeah.
Good for you.
12 the second time.
Most likely some of them were security undercover for you.
Probably.
Because you're such a troublemaker.
Luckily,
with an
camera
extra
phones
testicle.
Weren't as popular.
Yeah.
Like
your third nipple.
All right. Here we go. All right, listen.
You're the ripple.
Okay, we've digressed here this morning. But so, hey, we got a great guest coming in. Of course, I mentioned Bonner Paddock, who a couple years ago climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and recently completed an Ironman competition. But his story is a lot more interesting than even that. So you're listening to KX93.5 Laguna's Only FM. This is OC Caravan. April, you want to take us out with a little music, and we'll be back in 60
Bye-bye.
Seconds. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is OC Caravan. Let's redo that just for fun. We got the camera crew in here, so we want to make sure we do everything correctly. Are we ready to go, everybody? Yes?
Yeah.
Nice. Bloody well nice. You're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes, and this is OC Caravan. I'm in the studio this morning, of course, with my co-host, Jim Bastian. Jim, nice pre-segment there.
Yeah, you know, we just take it a little different direction, you know.
Good stuff.
You never know here.
Yeah, we also have Katie Fetters with us this morning. Good morning, young lady. How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, that sounds good. So I want to introduce our guest because Katie sort of set this up for us. She's the one who brought this person to our attention about 2 weeks ago. And as soon as we got to sort of know his background and his accomplishments, we jumped all over it. And we wanted to make sure we got him here as soon as we could. So in the studio is Bonner Paddock, which is a great fictional name for some book someday, right? I love that name. And let me give you a little background on what he has accomplished. A couple of years ago, he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, the tallest freestanding mountain in the world, 8 days, 64 miles in freezing temperature. Do I have that correct?
It was really cold.
Yeah. And he just recently completed his first Ironman competition. And for those who don't know what an Ironman competition is, it's a marathon, 26.2 miles. It's a 112-mile bike ride.
Yep.
And a 2.4-mile swim.
Correct.
Yeah. So, and he's got a documentary that came out about the climb titled Beyond Limits. And he's got a new book coming out this next month titled One More Step. Yeah.
Perfect.
So I want to backtrack a little bit. I want to talk about first between the Kilimanjaro climb and the Ironman competition. As an athlete, from your perspective, which of those two were more grueling for you and why?
Oh, Ironman Kona is the world championships in Kona is the most brutal race on earth. So
yeah.
It's not even comparable.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's a smashing all in one day. So the mountain you can... If you're having a bad day, which we did on day four, we can go down the mountain, kind of regroup, reset the tents, kind of take a deep breath, see if we can, you know, acclimate better, and then go up again. You can always go back. Ironman is you got one day, you got 17 hours. Doesn't matter what the conditions are. If not, you got to wait 364 more days to give it another shot. And
wow.
So it's kind of the pressure and just it's all in, compacted into one day is brutal.
You know, Scott, there's so many people that do the Ironman and climb mountains. That's not sounding very impressive to me. I mean, I'm like, okay, so we got this guy. I mean, I couldn't do it, but
yeah.
I know a lot of people who can. What's special?
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a moment.
Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely the big question here. The training went into Mount Kilimanjaro. How intensive was the training for that climb?
It wasn't as intense looking back on it, but for me, it was a huge step up in what I knew or what I thought was training and nutrition and those whole things. But one of my close friends, Jeff Weaver, was kind of right there by my side, would go to the gym really early with me in the morning and do a bunch of the hikes. But growing up here and at the time was living in Newport Coast, it was like, okay, well, there's not really big mountains around here that we could really go practice or, you know. So we basically were in Crystal Cove and hiked, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a day or a week right here. And that was the best we could do. But Jeff would get out there, go to the gym and do a lot of the hikes with me. So.
And did there ever come a point in that climb where you were just basically at the bottom of your reserve and you were considering not continuing?
Many times that creeps into your mind.
Yeah.
And so I think that was what the great growth was on that specific kind of venture was. How do you tell yourself that that's not true, that you got something deeper inside you, keep digging, you know, and going finding something that you maybe never thought existed?
How about the elevation? Crystal Cove is interesting, but what, 1,000 feet maybe? So how do you deal with the elevation at Kilimanjaro?
Maybe. We did Mount Whitney all in one day. So we went all the way to the summit and back one day, and it took us about 15 hours. So at least it gave us a kind of a little bit of a glimpse, even though we knew we had to go another 5,000 feet, you know, above that. But it kind of gave us a little look into the window of, okay, what happened to my head? And with the, you know, equilibrium issues that I already have, it's like, what did that do? And it was pretty mind-numbing, I guess, of what starts even happening at 11, 12, 13,000 feet. It's amazing. It's not pretty. It's like your head gets in a vise, and that's the best way to do it, is you just kind of crank on that vise, and the pressure just is pretty immense in your in your brain and on your head. So it's like worse than the worst hangover you've ever had.
Were there any deficiencies in terms of being able to process thoughts or anything, or was it purely like a physical type of symptom?
No, massive. It messes with your brain so much because your brain slowly expands as you go up for oxygen. So as everything expands, it starts pushing against your skull. So when that starts happening, your thoughts go, think of being, it is, again, going back, it's like a big night of drinking, and then it gets worse and worse to the point where you really stop losing trains of thought. You're not able to assess the situations well at all, and they sit you down and have a bunch of checks and balances on Summit when you go for the Summit attempt that day. So it's a very interesting progression. It was also 50 below zero, roughly, out there. So, you know, our water froze, you know, we didn't understand. I mean, I'm a novice when it came to these things. So just the whole adventure of why I'd even attempt this is just the kind of comedic yet dangerous, you know, a position that I put my own self in.
You know, you got to be mentally as strong as you are physically, I would think, yes?
Yeah.
And so when you did the Ironman competition last year?
Yeah, 2012, October 2012.
In 2012, at what point during that competition did you sort of lose focus or think that you weren't going to be able to finish? Which of those three, whether it was the marathon, the biking, or the swimming, became the most grueling aspect of that competition for you?
For me, the hardest part is the bike. And I think we're going to get to the reason why the bike is the most difficult for me. But running is extremely hard as well, but nothing compares to the bike because it isolates 97 to 98% to my legs. And just in that prone position over the handlebars, and you got the winds of Kona, you got the heat, and things that we don't normally deal well with and makes your body obviously perspire and try to keep fluids in. It's magnified based on what I have, and through that, the run, when I got finally to the run, my feet were already bleeding and pussing and bad before I even started the marathon portion.
So this is a nice transition then to sort of talk about, you know, as Jim sort of pointed out, people have climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. People have competed and finished Ironman competitions. Your two competitions were a little more challenging because you suffer from
Cerebral palsy.
And so maybe for the listeners and the viewers, maybe we should first define exactly what cerebral palsy is, mm-hmm. and that how that sort of affected your life growing up, and then how that affected the training and the climb and the marathon.
Sure.
Or the Ironman.
Cerebral palsy is one of the most common disabilities out there, but probably the least known of exactly what it is. You know, when I go speak a lot, I always ask people to raise their hands if they've heard cerebral palsy, and then I ask how many people actually know what it is, and almost 95 to 100% of the hands actually go down. And so it's very common. Literally was a healthy baby, per se, turned to go out the birth canal, umbilical cord got wrapped around the neck, and then it just starts choking you like a noose. And the critical time to get you out of the birth canal, random parts of your brain start dying. And with that, you don't control, and that's why you see such varying degrees of people with cerebral palsy, from people in wheelchairs, some people that need walking assistance, and some that, you know, really have trouble with speech and everything else, because it's random parts that just die of your brain. And so when you're born, they really kind of don't know what's going on. They're not sure what happened, especially back in the 70s. Definitely the advancements of technology of brain scans, MRIs, CAT scans, everything else really wasn't to the point, obviously, it is now. And to really fully understand what it was, our family didn't, and nor was I even diagnosed correctly until I was 11 years old. So that just shows kind of how there's so much overlap. A lot of people think it's CP, sometimes it's MS, just because I think of the acronyms and everything. But that's primarily what it is in general. I have spastic diplegia, it's the most common type of cerebral palsy, and that affects my lower half of my body. So my lower back, all the way to my feet. My brain is not able to fully tell that part of my body to relax. So if a person that is quote unquote average in terms of muscle function, you maybe have 21 gears of functionality. Like if you're shifting a car, you know, in gears, think of it that way. So you've got your low, you got when you're sleeping, you're relaxed. And then you got like your supreme performance gear, like everybody's is different. But we, you know, I probably have maybe between 5 and 6 gears is the best way to explain it based on what the doctors say. But I'm lucky because there's many, unfortunately, that don't have even but one. And that the default on the brain when that gets so bad, and when you see some kids that are very severe in a wheelchair and can't talk or anything, they have one function, and the default of the brain is your body locks up. So when your body can't communicate a message, instead of you know, passing it basically being a wet noodle where your muscles don't work at all, it locks. And so what we've always tried to figure out is how do we unlock that part of my brain so that my muscles can work better in my legs? So I have extreme tightness. And I say it's like if you haven't worked out for 6 months, and I heard the fitness, you know, we were talking about fitness earlier. And if you work out first time after 6 months, you're stiff, you know, and you're like, well, that's what I feel like every morning. And I was talking with Katie, and it's like it just gives it that moment. We just stiffen up so much faster. We have trouble getting fluids to those muscles. They tear and shred. And then quickly, it's very hard to replenish the nutrients into those muscles because they're always flexed tighter than the relax that we need the nutrients and, you know, water and everything to go into. So to do these, you know, endurance events is, that's why nobody had ever per se done those both, you know, it's just, that's what's bizarre.
So no one with CP had ever climbed Mount Kilimanjaro.
And done Kona Ironman.
Kona Ironman. Jim.
So you say you weren't diagnosed until you were 11.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in Orange County, sports are big and all. How did you fit into that world and how were your symptoms then?
And your brother Mike is here as well. Older brother Mike is here as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, my oldest brother Mike, who is an extreme, I mean, he's a superior athlete. Growing up, it was awesome to watch him. He was All-American swimmer. I mean, he played tennis, like won, you know, like the city championship. I mean, he just was a great athlete. And so even though my family chose to not talk about it, which is an interesting tact, and we can all be Monday morning quarterbacks, but it's a very interesting tact. And talking with Katie about her family, you know, they talked about it right away and embraced it and was very positive about it. My family was a very siloed communication family. We really struggled to communicate. It was, you know, parents got divorced at a very early age or separated at a very early age. So the communication structure just wasn't there. But I had my oldest brother, Mike, to look up to in terms of just such a supreme athlete. And so kind of growing up, I just tried to do everything he did. And when they said, well, you know, Bonner's walking, he's talking, so let's just let him kind of do his thing and let's not really talk about it. But I would go to doctor's appointments, and as a kid, you don't really care about doctor's appointments. You want to watch cartoons and everything else. So we just never really knew. I think we went to 6 doctors, got 5 different diagnoses, you know, in the early stages that, hey, I had an odd walk and, you know, was a little bit later to ride a bike and was having balancing kind of issues, fall down a lot, trip a lot, skin my knees. And so they basically, 2 of the 6 doctors or something said that I had spastic diplegia, but
it'll come to you. But yeah, let me ask this question while Mike's here. Growing up, were you competitive as brothers? And then my follow-up question would be, do you think he's enough of an athlete to complete Mount Kilimanjaro and the Ironman competition? You don't mind, do you, Mike?
No, I don't.
So to answer that question, I just remember it's syringomyelia, which is even a crazier name, but that's what I was diagnosed, which is basically a disease that would sever my spine through basically the growth of tumors by 15 and probably be dead by 20. So that was kind of what my original diagnosis was. So I apologize. I just
No, don't worry
that.
About it.
The secondary thing is we were extremely competitive, extremely. And I had a horrible attitude as a kid. I mean, brutal, like, I wanted to win at all costs and everything else, and he was the best. And so there were many times I hated to lose, had to, you know, and just always cried when I got scored on in soccer and everything like that. And he would out there, he had boxes of ribbons and medals. He had trophies like through his whole room. And so for me, that was kind of our family was, I want to be as cool as that, you know, because I thought that was cool. And, you know, he was the most popular guy in his school. He's a good looking cat. I don't want to let him, you know, his head get too big, but he's a good looking guy. He was a swimmer, you know, so this guy was just in great shape. Yeah. So, you know, everything that went along with just the coolness, you know, my brother Mike was. And so I looked up to him, and my dad with the divorce and everything wasn't around as much. So him and my grandfather Bampa, who grew up in Laguna Beach, you know, and lived here for the remainder of his life at the end, those two were kind of my father / big brother figures, and they both were insane swimmers. And my, you know, Bampa swam in the ocean every day till he was 80 at West Beach right here.
Yeah.
So the combination of those things, we were extremely competitive.
In some ways, that may have contributed to where you're at today in a lot of ways, no?
100%.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
And so you didn't ask my answer my second question.
What was the second question? I apologize.
Could he make the same climb and the Ironman that you have done?
So if I may share a quick story, because it's hilarious. So the gentleman that I was had the honor of being coached by is Greg Welch. And everybody calls him Welchie in the tri community. He's a world champion and arguably probably one of the greatest athletes to walk this earth. he was my coach through my our Oakley partnership. And so Mike was out there, and he was amazing. He was by my side the whole process of Ironman. And he was out there, and when we watched it in 2011, the year before, we flew out there to watch it and train and everything with Welchy. Towards the end of the trip, we were over at the Oakley house, and we were just hanging out with Welchy having dinner. And my brother Mike was like, I think I want to give this a try, you know. And Welchy's Aussie. He's an Aussie. And he's like, mate, I love you. I love you, Mike. But there's no chance, you know, you're going to be doing this Ironman. So it's pretty ironic and funny, in my opinion. And we definitely laughed. It definitely hurt his, I think, ego a little.
Dashed his hopes.
But he, you know, it was interesting to hear Welchy say that about him and then say, well, you know, there's a chance that Bonner, you know, could finish it. That's when the mental strength, I think, starts going almost to more 80-90% is when it helped me on that end.
Interesting, yeah.
So in the midst of the Ironman, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong on this, there's certain thresholds that you have to meet. They kick you out of the race, right?
Yes.
And so I understand you had some close calls in the course of it to actually – because they didn't create some special CP division that you can compete in and you get a break and you get to take as long as you want. This is – you're like everybody else.
That is correct. You start the same time as everybody else. You have this – your bike is racked right next to everybody else. It is probably one of the most pressure situations I've ever been because you have 17 hours. Because we were there 2 years before. There was a lady that finished 2 or 3 seconds after the 17-hour cutoff. She got no medal. She got a DNF. She didn't officially finish that race, which is crazy. And it just stuck in my mind that that was going to happen. So, yeah, you have to be off the bike by a certain time. I think it's 5:30 p.m. You have to be done by the race by midnight. And the swim, I think, is 2 hours or 2 hours and 10 minutes. You have to be out of the water. The swim was my best sport. And that was just growing up in the water and then, you know, training with Mike and everything like that in the ocean here is my upper body is actually pretty normal. I have great eye-hand coordination. But so the swim, we weren't so much worried, except my legs kind of act like a rudder in the water because of the CP so tight. It pulls it down. You know, it's hard to stay straight, per se. So,
what did you find was the biggest challenge of the Ironman with CP?
For me, it's the bike. So for me to be in that prone position, and I think Katie probably could say this the same, is like when you sit in an airplane for a long time or you sit in the same position in the long time, you know, we lock up. We stiffen up even in like a few hours or anything else like that. So we knew that the bike, coming down to the bike, was the most important thing and why we took the back cover picture is the bike, because we had to run a perfect bike race. And through that, you know, Cannondale sent their entire tech team out there just to do my bike. So we knew I had to have a perfect race on that bike to make that 5:30 cutoff.
And people can go out and YouTube this. There's a YouTube video of you crossing the finish line with a big sombrero hat and jumping up and down. We're going to take a very short 1 minute or less musical break. And we're going to come back. And in the studio, of course, we have Bonner Paddock. Who, am I saying that last name correctly? Paddock?
Yep, Paddock, yep.
Who's got a new book out we're going to talk about.
The book is One More Step, My Story of Living with Cerebral Palsy, Climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and Surviving the Hardest Race on Earth. It's available in HarperCollins in the next couple of weeks.
And by the way, you're listening to KX93.5, Laguna's only FM, and this is OC Caravan, and we're back in 1 minute or less. April.
Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I had a day that I could give you, I'd give to you a day just like today. If I had a song that I could sing for you, I'd sing a song to make you feel this way. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. In my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always me high. If I had a tale that I could tell you, I'd tell a tale sure to make you smile. A wish that I could wish for you, I'd make a wish for sunshine all the while. Sunshine on my shoulders makes me happy. In my eyes can't make me cry. Sunshine on the water looks so lovely. Sunshine almost all makes me high. Sunshine almost all the time makes me high. Sunshine almost all.
All right, you're listening to KX93.5 Laguna's Only FM. I'm Scott Hayes. This is OC Caravan in the studio this morning with my co-host Jim Bastian and Katie Fetters. And we're talking to Bonner Paddock, who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, who just competed a year or two ago on the Ironman competition, and who did all of that despite the fact he has cerebral palsy. Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Team Jake. This is sort of the inspiration for why you're here, for the documentary, for the book that's coming out, et cetera. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about Team Jake?
Sure. Team Jake was formed, unfortunately, out of the sudden death of a 4.5-year-old boy that had a very severe case of CP. That's kind of my inspiration and the fire that started my foundation, OM Foundation. But his dad and my family, we kept kind of my disability a secret for almost 30 years. And being the first person to kind of that group that that included Jakey's dad that I didn't know at the time, that it was kind of the first public group that I said openly that I had CP. And he was the one that sent me an email and said that I gave his son hope while he was alive. And so we ran the half a marathon in Orange County together in 2006. He was going to do the full, and we just really bonded on that run. And he ended up finishing that night, or finishing that marathon, his first ever, for his son, and carried his son across the finish line. But his son died that night. And so I told myself at that juncture, the next year I'm going to run a full marathon in his honor. And his parents formed Team Jake after his passing, and they come back to the Orange County Marathon every year in the hundreds, and we honor Jakey by running a half or a full or a 5K, and it's better than Christmas for me. It's the most powerful weekend I've ever been a part of every year. I look forward to it more than anything else, and it's incredible for those people that have been part of it.
Talk a little bit about your involvement with CP. You know, it's a big charity. I'm sure you're involved with it, and you want to give back, and obviously with your story about Team Jake, that shows that. So how do you approach giving back, and, you know, what do you do on a regular basis?
Yeah, United Cerebral Palsy of Orange County was the ones that really helped me kind of start to deal with talking and being comfortable with having cerebral palsy, because I wasn't. And I always thought people would judge me right away, and it led to just a lot of mind games that I played within my own head, because I think people are going to not like me or judge me. UCP was fantastic. Coming back from Kilimanjaro and meeting these amazing kids over in Africa, I told myself I got to do more, and I formed my own foundation called OM Foundation now, that it's a global foundation. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to give all my money to it. And so I fund the whole foundation out of my own pocket. And so all of the speaking fees, donations, all my royalties and everything from the book, from my portion, will go to my foundation. So I.
What does OM stand for?
One man, one mission.
Okay.
And it's like and it's just one of those things in life that I believe it's my mission now to give, hopefully inspire people, and really let people know that most of the things we choose not to do are our own mental blocks.
And did you raise money from the climb of Mount Kilimanjaro?
Yeah. So I raised that money. It was a little over $250,000 for
Amazing.
That. And then we raised, I think, over $750,000 around there for Ironman. So you know, I got to give a huge shout out to, I work for Young's Market Company here based out of Tustin, and you know, they were the biggest backers of that. The employees donated. We did amazing fundraisers, and our owners matched every dollar Beautiful. That raised. And our chairman, Vern, actually lives here off Moss Point. So he's a Laguna Beach resident. And yeah, them and Oakley have been the biggest partners pretty much throughout this whole thing.
And at the break, you were talking about the Team Jake Global Challenge with Oakley.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a global challenge that Oakley and I came up with. I got to give huge credit to Greg Welch again, and Dane Howell, and a couple other people that are at Oakley, that my second version of Signature Eyewear is going to be coming out, and we're going to show and unveil it at the March 15th book launch party. But
let me back up. You have your own Signature Eyewear?
Yeah, they made one for me a couple years ago to commemorate summiting Killy, and it was just limited edition, 200 pairs, and they gave not 10% or anything else. They gave 100% of the proceeds to that eyewear to my foundation, because they said they've never had an athlete, which I don't know if I really am an athlete, but...
Well, you're definitely an athlete, yeah.
One of those people...
Maybe even better than your older brother. By Nothing personal, Mike.
But they said they wanted to give 100% of it because of my foundation, so it's pretty cool.
So talk about the Team Global Challenge.
So the Global Challenge is you can't buy this eyewear this time. The only way you're going to do it is we're going to try to start people on their own journey that I started on. The first two physical things that I ever did was the half marathon and the full marathon in consecutive years. That was kind of what really lit the fire for me to do all of these other things. We know that everybody's life is different, but we believe if we can get people maybe off the couch, a lot of people have never done a half or a full. So if you do a half marathon anywhere in the world in 2015 and you do a full marathon anywhere in the world in 2016, Oakley and I will give you your own pair of my signature eyewear. So you just have to go to my foundation website and register, which is easy. You get a free shirt. You don't have to raise any money. We just want to inspire people to start an amazing journey, because what's happened outside of Killy and outside of Ironman is truly 99% of the magic that's happened. And those have just been kind of these foundations to really push me to the next level of how we can just inspire our own selves and like believe in ourselves and stuff like that.
How will the funds from your foundation be distributed? What purpose will it serve?
So what we do is we kind of have pods. So we have one in Orange County, and we currently have one in Tanzania, Africa. We are building one in Austin, Texas. And a pod basically means is we look for a partner, a charity. We do not have any staff. We have one part-time person that I do pay. It's my old boss at the Anaheim Ducks, which is hilarious that it's, again, it sticks to the family here. But you basically go in, and we partner up with a charity of like, you know, mission and vision. And we put together a whole, you know, bid sheet and everything. They've got to come present to us and say, and it's our gift to that community. We don't want anything in return. We just raise the money to build a center like this or support a center that's already existing that is doing amazing things like Orange County. The Life Without Limits Center here with United Cerebral Palsy of Orange County is a beautiful kind of project that we want to just mass multiply and do it on larger scale. And the head of my medical team is out of chalk, so we really want to build the most cutting-edge center in the world for gait analysis, for disabled kids of neuro, so autism, Down syndrome, spina bifida, and cerebral palsy, and work through that community because it's something that I never knew or how to be involved with. So we want to build the best center on earth here in Orange County.
It sounds like an amazing journey you're on, by the way.
So with the challenge, is there another big event that you have planned? Are you going to go to Everest? What's next for you?
So I still don't have medical clearance to even exercise right now since Ironman. So it's been almost 2.5 years, just the body that the toll that it takes on my body. It takes us a little bit longer to recover if we break bones or anything else. So hopefully I get clearance. If not, I'm going to be walking the half marathon in May for the Orange County Marathon. But it's really going to take that on. And I believe the next challenge for me is the book was actually more personal developing. I had to grow up a lot. And I was able to address a lot of the things growing up of, you know, having some tough times, maybe getting teased and everything else. That book was my therapist to really unload and readdress a lot of things that I had tried to block out.
Let's talk. It's called One More Step, My Story of Living with Cerebral Palsy, Climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and Surviving the Hardest Race on Earth, Bonner Paddock. It's through publishing through HarperCollins?
Yeah, HarperCollins and Harper One, yep.
And Harper One,
mm-hmm.
And it's coming out in the next several weeks.
March 10th is the launch date, so yep. you can get it on Amazon, you can get it on Barnes & Noble, you can get it pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. Katie, you had a question, yeah?
Yeah. What's something positive you take away from having CP kind of after all of this?
That's a good question.
There is no chance on earth that I'd be sitting here today if I was quote-unquote normal. I wouldn't have pushed myself. I don't think the challenges that I would have had in my life, and I don't think I would have truly been at a place now where I understand who I am as a person and actually love myself. I think it's something that I may have had a nice job and done some nice things, and you know, but it truly was always my driver, both negatively in the first 30 years of my life. I used all the negative criticism that I got to say that I'm going to prove these people wrong, but I would do it through work and be successful at that. But that's really, I learned, is so shallow and not what I wanted. Now it's loving myself and loving who I am and sharing this gift that even if maybe if you look at me as saying it's harder for me to go do an Ironman or anything, that really all the limits are what we put on ourselves. That's it. And I'm just not going to try to put any of those limits, both mental or physical, ever again.
You have a second question?
Yeah. I always kind of wonder this. What is something you wish that people knew about CP?
I just wish people would not be afraid to come up to people with that are different. And if especially kids. I mean, we're so impressionable, and you see, unfortunately, some horrible things that kids are doing to each other out there. And if they're in a wheelchair and everything, we actually like to be approached. We do. If we walk different, no big deal. It's okay to come up and ask us, engage us with a smile and ask, but don't stare. Don't like look at it. That's not what life is about. It's about actually loving each other and literally just coming up and asking. It's okay to ask. We want that. And the kids light up because they're usually not able to do a lot of sporting events and everything. So go up and just say hi and everything. It will change their life more than anybody else. It smiles and happy, and thank yous, and please. That's what life is about, and it's free.
So Bonner, where you've gone through these challenges, you've now written this book, and a lot of people who write books, they talk about it as being therapy. So with all of this growth you've undergone and these challenges that you've overcome, what's next? What are your goals for the next, you know, 3, 5, 10 years?
3, 5, 10 years is continue to build the foundation, you know, go out. I speak and that's the great thing, is to go out and just share a story. And we work really hard to put it into a context that it relates to everybody. And it's 5 things that I've learned in my life. And I just try to share them with everybody because they're relevant there. So I really, the 3, 5, and 10 is go to Africa every year, build up Africa and Tanzania, maybe, and then move up towards Kenya and then start going into the really, really tough quadrant of Somalia and everything in Sudan. And that's where we want to eventually end up over there. And then here is, again, spreading it out in the United States with finishing getting the Orange County one built, then starting on the Austin one, and then moving forward. So it's all focused on that. And then I love marketing. So working for Young's, they allow me to go speak. They allow me all this time. So it's just continuing to further that career and then the foundation. And they're just both. I mean, no more physical challenges except the Team Jake Global Challenge, I promise you. No Everest, no nothing. I'm done. After Kili, I knew I still had a driving desire to do something. After Ironman, it was such a different journey of like love and not fear and everything else. And I loved the journey, and it was because of my brother Mike and because of Welchie that it was just an amazing thing. And I don't need to go do any more physical things. I don't need to prove anything anymore.
Where can people learn more about you, your foundation, where all that stuff? Where would they go? Where would you send them?
OneManOneMission.org, and it's the number one, not spelling it out, O-N-E. So OneManOneMission.org, you can find everything.
Bonner, Paddock, you know, you're an inspiration not only for people who suffer from CP, but for all of us who are athletes or try to be athletes and want to be athletes.
Oh, we're not athletes.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just saying. Bonner, Paddock, it was a pleasure, my friend, for having you come into our studio. We really appreciate you.
It's an honor to be here, and thank you for having me.
Best of luck with all you got going on,
thank
my
you very
friend.
Much.
Thank you. You've been listening to KX93.5, Laguna's Only FM. This is OC Caravan. I'm Scott Hayes, Jim Bastian.
Great show, Scott. Yep. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
All right, April, take us out of here.